Andy, my dude, have you heard of the magical website builder known as Squarespace?
Ugh, not another Squarespace ad. I feel like every podcast is sponsored by them.
Hey, don't knock it until you try it. Yes, okay, it is overhyped, but actually it lives up to the hype. Squarespace is like a website fairy godmother. With a click of a button, your site transforms into a beautiful masterpiece.
A website fairy godmother? That sounds interesting. What makes it so magical?
Well, for starters, those slick templates make anyone look like a professional web designer. Pick one, customize the colors and fonts to match your brand, and voila. Plus, the drag-and-drop fluid engine is so easy, your grandma could build a site on Squarespace.
Well, she did knit me a lovely scarf last Christmas. Maybe website design is next.
Exactly. And when you're ready to sell your Nana's handmade scarves online, Squarespace has built-in e-commerce. Add a store with one click, get flexible payment options, then watch those sales roll in. And when she wants to teach others her steezy scarf skills, Squarespace's new courses feature is just the ticket. Nana can set up her curriculum and enrollments and payments in a snap and become the next e-knitting influencer.
Ugh, wow, you really sold me with the grandma angle. Sign me up for that free trial.
Just go to thenextreel.com/Squarespace and transform your site into a beautiful Squarespace masterpiece.
Well, thanks, Pete. Even though it's overhyped, Squarespace actually sounds perfect for Nana's site's needs. Appreciate the warning on the ads, though. I'll brace myself next time I listen to a podcast.
Anytime. Let me know if you need any help getting that site up and running. Andy, can you believe we've almost hit 700 episodes of The Next Reel?
I know, it's crazy. And with all the other episodes in our family of podcasts, we are well over 1,200 episodes of movie conversation. It's really pretty amazing that we've gotten to have these in-depth movie chats every week for over a decade now.
And we couldn't have done it without our loyal community of film fans. Their support over the years has meant so much.
For sure. That reminds me, we should give the merch store a shout out. Buying shirts from thenextreel.com/merch is a great way listeners can continue to support the show. Plus, they get to sport our great designs.
Absolutely. I think sometimes folks forget we have a variety of shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more available. In fact, a great place to start is with a shirt sporting the Next Reel's logo.
We also have that classic Fast Times Spicoli Surf School tee, or the weirdly popular Rusty's European Tour shirt.
The one from National Lampoon's European Vacation. Why is that so popular?
Search me, but we have sold a ridiculous number of those. I guess there are a lot of Rusty's taking trips to Europe?
We're always adding new designs based on movies we've covered, like our brand new design for A Streetcar Named Desire, featuring a streetcar named Desire. So if you want to rep your love of TNR and films, head to thenextreel.com/merch.
Every purchase helps us continue to have these weekly in-depth conversations. So visit thenextreel.com/merch today.
And as always, thanks for listening and being a part of the Next Reel community. We've got lots more great movie chats coming your way.
The film board gathers. The gang of thugs is here to take on a movie currently in theaters. And this month, we're taking sides in Alex Garland's latest take on the Electoral College Civil War.
19 states have seceded.
The United States Army ramps up activity.
The White House issued warnings to the Western forces as well as the Florida Alliance.
The three-term president assures the uprising will be dealt with swiftly.
Let me know if you want to try anything on.
I guess aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on all across America.
We just try to stay out. With what we see on the news, seems like it's for the best.
Citizens of America,
the so-called Western forces of Texas and California
have suffered a very great defeat at the hands of the United States military.
Mr. President, do you regret the use of airstrikes against American citizens?
We're moving to D.C. today.
We need to go down there.
They shoot journalists on sight in the Capitol.
Every instinct in me says this is death.
Flood it.
Every time I survived a war zone, I thought I was sending a warning home. Don't do this. But here we are.
There's some kind of misunderstanding here.
What?
Well, you're American, okay?
Okay. What kind of American are you? You don't know?
The Western forces will reach the White House on July 4th.
Oh, my God.
Get in the car! Get in the car! Move, move, move!
You're gonna hang back.
I'm not hanging back.
One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Go, 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 go!
God bless America.
Welcome, everyone, to this potentially polarizing production of The Film Board. I'm going to introduce you to our hosts today, and I want each of them to tell in clear English, no accents, no stumbling, where are you from, Tommy Metz?
Hello. Well, I already blew it. Hi, my name is Tommy Metz. I was born in where this movie ends up. I was born in Vienna, Virginia, close to Washington, D.C., and then I moved to Boulder, Colorado, and did most of my growing up there.
Excellent. And you, Steve Sarmento?
Yes, I am originally from Illinois, north suburbs of Chicago, and since leaving there, have been out here in Phoenix, Arizona.
The real
See, that's what I'm talking about. Real Americans.
Yep.
That, along with many other cringy things, are happening in this movie that makes for fantastic conversation. And that's especially why I'm happy to be here talking with you guys about today. Let's start with your opening thoughts about what you thought about Civil War. First person to see it was Steve. So Steve, how'd you feel about it?
I very much enjoyed this movie. I had a feeling from the trailer that this was not going to be a traditional war movie or story, that we were going to have something different with these journalists. So I was expecting something like a road movie, journey type of movie. So I went in still not knowing exactly what to expect, but really enjoyed this this road trip with this group of individuals. So I thoroughly enjoyed this.
Interesting. Very good. Very good. Tommy, what were your thoughts?
I'm a big Alex Garland fan, the director. I've loved all of his movies, save one. But even that one, his latest one, Men, was still beautiful. And I still respected it. It was just hard to enjoy, especially the last 20 minutes. Spoiler alert. But this movie I was very excited for and had quite a bit of anxiety about going into it, because I was afraid it was going to really be into politics. We can get into how it sort of involves politics and does a fair job skating around actual politics. But my overall thought, I'm sorry, JJ, I loved it.
Okay. Well, no, but this is great. And
yeah,
I actually didn't introduce myself, so I should say these guys know me.
Yes.
JJ here.
This is JJ.
I am glad that you guys—
Did you say where you're from?
Oh, I grew up in Minnesota. We're real Americans. For, yep. I hate that term. I don't even want to use it anymore. I was doing it to just talk about the movie, but sure. That's, you know, anyway. I am from Minnesota. I grew up in a suburb of Minneapolis and was born in the city. But I think it's good that you guys liked it and that you enjoyed it. Because for me, one of the things we talk about on the show a lot of times is we will say something like, I didn't like the movie, but I'm really glad it exists, or mm-hmm. I'm really happy they made it. I respect it, right? These are things we talk about in the film.
I just said that about the movie Men. In
right,
effect.
There you go. Yeah. So for me, this movie is different than that, in that I know it's a really good movie. I know it is executed fantastically. I think it's wonderful in terms of it being a film that should be seen. My problem is I don't know if I'm happy that it was made. I think I'm very angry about the fact that this piece of art exists, and I don't know why. And so when we get later and we start talking about our rankings and reviews and stuff, I have a rating for it. And then I don't know if I like it or not, because there are lots of things about this movie that anger me, both on the execution side and on the conceptual side. So I'm excited to talk to you guys about it. And I think
Great.
The key thing really is the conversation. And I think it is
impossible to say that this movie does not deserve conversation. And that's something that is, if you look at anything from this weekend, Tommy and I, you were, and I were doing this exercise just earlier this week, it is impossible to get something about another movie that is anything close to Civil War, because everything is out there about this movie right now. All the hype, all the discussion is about this. So I'm really glad we're talking about it one way or another. So let's first start with the summary here. This is, I think, this is typed up. It's not my writing, but I want to read it so that we can give people a clue about what's going on here. It says, it's a in a future dystopian United States under the dictatorship of a third term president, a civil war rages. Veteran photojournalist Lee Smith, alongside her colleague Joel and her mentor Sammy, embark on a perilous journey to Washington, D.C. to interview the president. Along the way, they rescue Jesse, an aspiring war photographer, from a suicide bombing in New York City. The group faces frontline combat, encounters with ultra-nationalist militias, and personal tragedies. Jesse, transformed by her experiences, captures these critical moments on camera, documenting the fall of the dystopian regime. And honestly, when I was watching this film, one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that it is a series of set pieces. You know, it is an episodic nature of this road trip that they go on. One of the things is that I noticed is that a majority of the things that happen in this movie, you have seen, you've had the seeds planted for you in the trailers leading up to the film. Did you feel that way too? Did you feel like there weren't any set pieces that were unexpected for you?
The snowman village was unexpected for me. I didn't see that at all. The full incorporation of the town that seems to exist out of time, that became more interesting. The very last shot of that made it seem really more interesting. So I didn't feel led by the hand. And they even chopped up, you know, the trailer's big wahoo is the Jesse Plemons line, and even that is actual different in the film. It doesn't go the way that it does in the trailer. They recut a conversation together. So I thought there was still, I wasn't bothered by that, if that was what your question was.
It's not that, but it was, I think bothered by it. It was the kind of thing of, if we're looking at the summary as a potential synopsis, potentially it's not as spoiler laden if we've seen most of what's already happening in the trailer, I guess was my point, or the reason for the question.
Okay.
Yeah. For me, in watching it, there wasn't a whole lot that took me by surprise. I do think the Winter Wonderland neighborhood is interesting and potentially the key good part of the film for me. But for in what I was watching here, if we just talk about the journalistic concepts of coverage and treatment. So I come to this movie from a really interesting perspective, being that I was in the TV news business for 14 years. And I know it's a piece of art. I know movies are not journalism. This is fiction. This is everything you're going to watch here is a fiction. And it's pretty clear. And Tommy, you talked about skirting around the political issues, that they tried to enhance the way it is there. But for me, the questions that I want to start out this discussion with for you guys are, in the concepts of coverage and treatment, why is this movie done, right? Why are they covering it? Why is this being made? And why do they treat it the way it is? Because for me, in most films, I get a sense of understanding the artist's idea of why they want to make it or what the message is. For me, this piece of art left me very confused at why this, why now, which is a lot of the question a lot of people are asking, and why the choices that were made here. So maybe let's start with Steve again. What was your idea in when you see this movie? Why is this movie made? And how do you feel about the way that they treated the concept that are in the movie?
Oh, why is anything made? Because it's Hollywood and to make money, right?
Do you think that's...
ultimately, yes, the studio needs to make money. But what was the creative impetus behind telling this particular story? And I think that's an interesting question to ask. And I know in the press, a lot of people have asked Alex Garland, like, what we want to know what's going on. Why would California and Texas get together? And he said, that's the question you need to ask yourself. I'm not going to give you that answer, but what would have to happen in this country for those two, you know, politically opposite entities to get together to fight against a common force? You know, you're the enemy of my enemy is my ally type of thing. And for me, it is, I think the issue is people are going to go in thinking this is about the Civil War. And that's the setting of the story of these journalists taking this trip. And so for me, as soon as the credits finished and I sat in my seat, I thought, and I don't want to say this is a comparison, but when it comes to types of stories, the first thing that came to my mind is Apocalypse Now, because it is a journey mm-hmm. down a river. I mean, a paved river, really, here, the road, and there are incidents along the way. And so it is the quest to get the big interview. That's what we get.
And right, you're going to usurp a mad king.
Yes, essentially. Right. There's a madman at the end of this journey. We're going to have a conversation. We get that early on of we're going to D.C. We're going to get the interview with the president. This is for Lee, the photographer. This is the last thing she wants. This is the shot for her to get. Right. That's ultimately. So it's about her quest there. It's about Jesse, the young, you know, starting photographer. And to me, it's really about that transition of the innocent to the experienced, and the experienced veteran of sort of mentoring or that type of process, and conveying that knowledge and experience. So it's really about that relationship. Because early on, there's that conversation between Lee and Jesse where Lee says, you know, this is your choice. I'm not going to carry any guilt because this is your choice. And, you know, you may end up dead. And Jesse asks, if that happens, will you get the shot, you know, type of thing of, is it really about the photography? You know, what are these people like, you know, when that's their motive, you know, to put personal feelings aside, this is business, this, that. And so it was really the dynamic between those two and that relationship and how it changes and grows through the series of little sort of episodic sequences we have through the story. So I think people that want all the warfare, all of that, are going to be very disappointed. Because for me, at least, it's a different story. It's, yes, a little bit about the journalism, but to me, it's really about the relationship of the characters. Just as I would say Apocalypse Now is sort of a war movie, it's not. It's set in a war era, but it's really about a man's quest and self-discovery through that. And I would say that's the same thing for Civil War. So to get through all of that, I'd say Alex Garland was making the movie, my feeling, is similar to Apocalypse Now, of exploring in it, you know, the internal journey and growth of two artists.
Interesting. I guess one of the things that I find really interesting about that is that nothing that I've seen, and I would assume that nothing that he's going to be questioned about or has been questioned about is about that story, right? Everything is about the background and setting of what leads to that story. But I agree with you. It's not. For me, it is definitely a war movie, but it is really the story of these war photographers going through war. And I have stuff to say about that too. But Tommy, throwing it to you now, why do you think this movie, why are we covering this?
Well, I think one of the reasons we're covering it is because in a semi-recent poll, 40% of Americans see a civil war coming in the within the next like 10 years. This story about how divided we are isn't like progressing. The story is just about how divided we are. Like, it's just, we're just parroting that over and over again. We're divided and we're so divided. No, we're not that divided. We're more divided than ever. And so we're not really getting a lot through that prism. It's just everyone has their camp and we've decided that's where we live. I agree with Steve to a point. I do think that it is about the evolution of these characters and these characters together, but I like the idea of him choosing to follow journalists, because as Kirsten Dunst's character says in the beginning, it's not our job to comment or have feelings. It's our job to take the shot and let other people have feelings. And that's kind of what Alex Garland does as a director of this movie. By not fully politicizing it, what this movie about, I think, if I could posit my thing, it's about what it's like to be a witness to war. That it's less, I thought this movie was going to be this is what's going to happen in America. And instead it's, if this happens in America, this is what it's going to look like. It's going to look like scenes in Apocalypse Now. It's going to look like all of these weird episodic parts of people losing track of their orders, people defying orders, people's base nature coming up and taking over, a mix of chaos with absolute control, all of these things, that instead of saying that it was red versus blue, it was a fascist against the country that potentially he, you could say, left behind. And so witnessing war, you see what has happened to Kirsten Dunst. And you see what is happening to I don't know anyone's names because I'm dumb, but the young up and coming photographer, how Jesse. She's changing. But all of that is less about each other, I think, and more witnessing what is happening how that changes you and how, and this whole movie in effect is a little bit like, because everything that we see that is so shocking in this movie, I find very shocking. I do think it's a war movie. We see in real life through the news happening in countries all around the world all the time. It just hasn't happened here since the actual Civil War. But the idea of like a refugee experience, the idea of civil unrest, all of that, we don't have the movie that I think closely resembles this movie. This is going to sound weird at first, is Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds. Because War of the Worlds, once everything starts to fall apart, it becomes the American refugee experience. There's the cities aren't safe. Right. And so it's people going through. And that's just something we haven't had to go through fully as a nation for a really long time. So that was over talking. My apology. But that's what I think. That's why I think why he chose journalism is a real strength of the movie, it turns out. And it's less of a it could happen here and more of a like, if it does, this is probably what it's going to be like. And isn't that terrible and tragic? And does it wake you up to see it on your own front lawn?
See, so the problem for me, like I don't disagree with those things. And I feel like that might be the aim in what's there. But I definitely don't gather. I can't be certain is basically how I feel because of the reason that for me, the experience of watching this movie was a lot like watching Saving Private Ryan in that I got very early on, but I got desensitized to the violence. And maybe that is by nature exactly what's happening here too, in that as these journalists are running through all of this area, like everything just kind of feels like war and everything just feels dangerous and harrowing. And I don't have the emotional connection at the end of the film because I had given up on it. Not the film, on the emotional connection to what was going on because of all of the war that I experienced there. And maybe that is just experience of war.
I think that's what happened to Kirsten Dunst. Until it becomes personalized, she is deadened and war torn throughout the movie until she sees a death happen on her emotional front lawn. Right. I'm going to stop saying front lawn. And then it's like she wakes up to the horrors of war again. It's reinvigorated for her. What she has turned off, I'm sorry, and been able to dull in herself.
Yeah, and I have definitely lived with, in the 14 years that I was in news, I have definitely lived alongside of reporters and shooters and all these kind of people that love the thrill, that love that chase into the action and all of that. And I have never been that guy. I have never been the kind of person who's like, are you getting excited? We're going to go see action tomorrow. That has never been my scene. And that's probably why I'm not in the news anymore. Right. Because I made that shift to get away from that. One of the other things, so I just mentioned the concept of shooters. One of the things that made me really angry about in this movie is because the central aspect of this is about journalism, that from my experience, and this is a long time ago when I was in the news, I think I stopped being a reporter in 2010. I stopped being a shooter, a photojournalist.
Are we allowed to say shooter?
Well, this is my point.
Yeah.
The dialogue in the film is not the way that people in the journalism industry talk about themselves. It was very stilted to me in lots of places, specifically when you think about Lee, Kirsten Dunst's character, trying on the dress, and Jesse says, I want to take your photo. No one ever says, I want to take your photo. Or when they walk up to the helicopter, the crashed out helicopter, and she says, it will make a very good image. Like, it's really, I have to get the photo. They say photo. Photo is used so much in this movie. And I don't think anyone in the world talks about pictures as photos. Do they? Do you know that? Do you know people?
I need to take a photo of that. No, it's picture.
Or shot.
And
this is the thing. So I said shooter, and we had a little talk with Pete before we started this, and he had a very good insight of this, which I want to say too. All of my years in the news, all of my years in camera operating, we always talked about getting the shot, just keep shooting, all this stuff. Pete actually made the comment that no longer, that students are now being taught that saying shooting and shooter is now, cannot say it because it leads people to think about guns. Mm-hmm. Are you guys familiar with that at all? Does that sound?
That never would have occurred to me.
I can I can see
but
that.
But I'm not a snowflake. I'm from right. real America.
No, it, as culture changes, our language needs to change about some of those things because of things exactly like that, because of mixed messaging, because of that phrase can be very upsetting to people or miscommunicating what's going on with that. So I can see that happening, but I get your point as well of there's the industry lingo, and then there's how do we get that out to the general public that aren't living and embedded in that culture of that photojournalist, make it seem real. And I think that's a challenge with any you know vocation that we're going to be in a movie of. The insiders are going to be like, that's not quite accurate, but people outside would say, oh, that felt real. So it's treading that line, but I understand that there's that aspect of it.
Jesse asked Lee at one point, like, how did you decide to become a photojournalist?
Yeah.
And no one in that world calls people in that world photojournalists. Right. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying that's not the language.
Right.
Did you guys, when Joe at one point runs out and he's like, are we in a time portal? Like, I don't like all of the dialogue felt like that to me, where it was just really on the head to make sure everybody got it, as opposed to like, this is a war movie and this is the way that people talk in war. Did that happen to you guys at all?
It didn't really bother. Now that you point out photo, I'm afraid I'm never going to be able to watch the movie the same way again. But because I didn't notice that, but sometimes Alex Garland's dialogue can be a little on the nose, but I think part of also what we're dealing with is he is British. Yeah. And so potentially him trying to write for as journalists and especially American journalists that might be, and is not a director that people are going to go, this isn't how that should sound. He's beyond that point. So potentially he needed another person to be like, let's have a American pass.
Yeah, and that's fair too. I mean, Pete brought up that point as well too, that maybe the British actually call it something different, which is definitely possible.
The Paps.
So moving back to sort of these set pieces and everything that I wanted to talk to you guys about what was my favorite set piece in there. Mm-hmm. And Tommy, you brought it up earlier, wasn't in the trailer, was that Winter Wonderland scene. Right. And in particular, what the meaning of the movie for me was, as best as I could imagine, is the sort of de-evolution of people and their sides and having that conversation with the two snipers when they say, that guy's trying to kill us, so we're trying to kill him.
Yeah, that's stop it. Talking about sides. Stop talking about who's your allegiance to.
Right.
Yeah.
He
killed one of ours. He's in the road. And so, and we can't get up. He's trapped. We're trapped. That's it.
So that is the movie for me. And none of the other stuff mattered to me at all. Everything else felt like shock and awe about how terrible people can be. And there are other great scenes in the movie, but that for me was the only message that mattered, was that really these ideas that everyone is asking Alex Garland about are not what the movie is about. It's just the fact that if they're trying to kill me, I'm trying to kill them.
I don't disagree. That's why I think it is a movie about war.
Yeah.
It's about if you go long enough, all allegiances and spread people out thin enough, all allegiance will be gone. All the bullets will be gone. We will resort to clubs. If we don't have clubs, we'll resort to rocks. I mean, you'll just keep having to go. I mean, Jesse Plemons' entire character, and I thought that was a pretty gripping sequence of just a mix of lawlessness, lack of clear vision, or is clearly being told to cover up a massive crime by higher ups. We don't know because we never get there, but it's just not. Yeah, I mean, it feels at times very much, in which is so effective for me, at taking place on these green lawns and rolling hills. It feels like a Vietnam movie. You already said Apocalypse Now. Because, I mean, yeah, there's too much money. There's too many people. They don't understand what's going on. And they all slowly go insane. That was how, Francis Ford Coppola described the filming process of Heart of Darkness, of Apocalypse Now. But that's also what happens in the movie. It seemed like the only people that kind of had their stuff together was the Western Force.
Well, and so that's an interesting question too, because I have read some dialogue too that says the Western Force in the movie, I thought the Western Force was just Texas and California. But from what I've read about the movie, that there are actually 19 states that had seceded. Was that clear to you guys in the movie?
No, there's only two stars on the flag.
Well, there's the Western Front or Western Forces or Frontier or whatever it is. It's Texas and California. They do mention early on Florida that had tried to somehow
Florida Alliance
and something with the Carolinas. And then,
Portland.
Yeah. There was a couple other things.
Portland Maoist.
Right. But yeah, there may have been some things in the script that were cut, because I know online there have been some maps showing other alliances of seceded clusters of states, and that it may, in the president's speech at the beginning, there may have been some reference to, you know, those states in general, but no, there wasn't a sense of how small the president and his United States that were, you know, loyal to him, how many there were. So I think in general, on first watch, yeah, the general sense is Florida and some states on the East Coast, and then Texas, California, and that's really about it, with maybe some smatterings, because we do get references to Lee's parents in Colorado trying to live like, you know, just ignoring this gun, and Jesse, her folks in Missouri or whatever. So we get a sense that there are some states that have sort of just abstained from taking sides at all, to the extent that we get that represented in that small town of, we just feel it's just best to stay out. And so I don't know how many states have sort of decided, let's opt out of this nonsense to the best of our ability.
Which I enjoyed. I liked the, what does opaque mean? You can see it or you can't see it?
Cannot.
The opaqueness of some of it, of just getting little glimpses of things. Yeah. I'm a big fan of that versus, you know, there's a version of this movie that would have started with a big long Chiron or whatever, like all of, and this date, this happened, this date. Right. But we get little things. We hear about the, what were the flashpoints? You know, he had a third term. He disbanded the FBI. He bombed his own cities, the Antifa massacre of blankety blank, which would have been a huge spark. He was killing journalists on site. Right. You can see how, like any regime, it just started to keep falling apart and keep falling apart and keep falling apart.
In that way, I don't dislike that either, Tommy. Yeah. But in that way, it reminded me of that Netflix movie that came out just recently, Leave the World Behind, where you just know that a whole bunch of dramatic things are happening on a massive scale, and you don't know anything except for you as the characters are experiencing it. I didn't super love that movie, but I think it's interesting that right now, if we talk about why this movie is made for us as the audience, and I don't mean just the three of us, I mean the audience as a whole, is this a collective understanding of the way that we feel at global politics right now, in that there's a bunch of dramatic stuff happening and we're just experiencing that dramatic stuff, but we don't know why?
Oh,
you're saying that the opaqueness is actually baked in for a real reason. That's an interesting thought.
Experiencing it in an opaque way.
My original reason to think that is because he didn't want to make it about red versus blue. He didn't want to pick. He didn't want to say, this is what it's going, what you, America, are going to lead to, and this is how it's going to happen.
Right.
You know, that would be a terrible movie.
He didn't want to.
A Brit would not be allowed to make that movie. And so that's why I think that. But I like the idea of being on the ground and only getting to know what you are sort of told. And the only person that we really see broadcasting in this movie is the president, the president's voice. And he's saying everything's going great for me, which is clearly a lie. But that's what people like that, Ceausescu's, do. Yeah.
Politicians do. I think one of the things that's interesting is that I also agree that he has done things to sidestep the politics. But in a lot of the commentary that I've seen about this, and I kind of agree with this, the politics are impossible to ignore, in that two key things happen to our main characters in this. That is that they are told that journalists are shot on site in Washington, D.C. And it is very clear by the end of the movie that the journalists are completely aligned with the Western forces. So what does that mean to you in terms of when you see that, and when you get the big kicker at the end of this movie, that the journalists have a clear side to align with in this battle, even though in so many ways they are trying to avoid the politics of that situation?
I guess my immediate thought, and then I'll let Steve talk because he's smarter than I am. My immediate thought is, we have gone beyond sides, again, red and blue. He is clearly a fascist. He has gotten rid of everything that we try to hold dear in America. So it's not really about that anymore. We've lost. It's almost like the rest of America against him and his goons. It's like the last brick and mortars of that sort of movement. So that's why I think it's a little bit different. You're siding with the part that still wants America to look like America again, with two-term presidents and an FBI and not shooting people on sight. That stuff is my initial thought.
Yeah, I would agree with Tommy on that. I think that the journalists do have an interesting, you know, neutral stance that they're supposed to be taking, is we're here to comment on, we're supposed to report on. But I think in any conflict, just our own personal morals will have us favor one side over the other, who we feel is right in this conflict. And we get a sense of that even in the conversation in the car, when it's like, when you get there, what question are you going to ask? Are you going to ask this question? No, I'm not going to give him a softball. I'm going to, what about this? What about, oh, okay, that's the question. You know, how
did, you that was
know,
kind of a clever way to do expository, yes, what's happened in the past. I thought it was kind of, yes, clever.
And so it gives a sense of how to hold. I think any journalist, and again, JJ, you can speak to this, in a good interview, whichever side person you have, you want to call them out on the tough questions. You want to challenge them. So I get a sense of, this is part of the function of this group to get there, is we want to ask them the tough questions, because there's no one there to ask them that. And I see that as sort of the purpose of the journey, because yeah, he's been killing journalists on site. If we can get in there in these last days when he's on his way out, we've got a reason to hold his feet to the fire, to ask him some tough questions. And that's why I take as sort of their driving motivation in this, of that's the big get for them, is, which is why we get that moment of, they get there, it's too late. They're already, you know, storming. And so it's that sense of, oh no, you know, we lost that opportunity. I'm like, no, we still got time. I can see the deception that's coming, the twists that are coming that we'll get there. But I think that's where I felt along for the ride with them. So I didn't get as meta, I think, as you are about some of this with the journalism. I was willing to just go along with what the pieces I was given, to say, okay, what is it that they want? I think it's that audience surrogate role, right? Of, it's clear there's got to be bad guys in this. And so we're fed that. So we know they're not truly objective and neutral in this role.
And alongside that idea, if he's just killing journalists, then they can't interview the other side normally. There's no one else to tag along with. Maybe a missed opportunity that I'm glad is not in this movie, because that would have driven my anxiety through the roof, is there a news system that is on the American side versus the Western Forces side, American in quotes, like a Newsmax or something,
state-sponsored propaganda kind of a thing.
Yeah. And I didn't get that feeling, because it felt like all of the stuff was just coming from the White House's core. Would have been an interesting way to go about, of really up the propaganda angle, but that would have made it so much more distressing for me.
Yeah, well, the distress is something that I'm grappling with in this movie too. And that's something that I want to talk about as well, in that, because Tommy, in what you said before that all that was left in DC, or you didn't say these words exactly, but what was left in DC is the president and his goons, right? And very clearly Garland's not trying to take sides, not trying to take political sides here. But what we see in the final sequence of the film is the Western forces storming the White House and killing multiple Secret Service agents who are potentially his goons, but who are also doing what their job is, to protect the president no matter what, regardless of their political affiliation. And so we see this. We see what happens in a civil war. So for me, and I try to avoid this feeling all the time, but in this movie, I was not able to, about how potentially dangerous it is to say that it is okay to storm a government building if you believe you are in the right in a post-January 6th world. Because, especially because Alex Garland skirts around the politics here, I hate this term too, but both sides are going to feel completely justified in doing the kinds of things that happened on January 6th. So I'm literally scared by this movie and what it means to our, like, the political discourse for our country right now. It doesn't make sense because it potentially justifies the division.
Even though he did so many things, I mean, that's why I think that Texas and California,
sides are saying, the other sides are saying,
but I think, honestly, what the difference, why I like the idea, maybe the difference, why I like the idea of Texas and California, who are so different ideologically, but what neither of them, one thing that they can agree on is they don't want a king. They don't want a despot. I know that we can't throw all of Texas in with red. And we can't say all Texas people love our, a certain ex-president of ours. And they both have the economies formed together and the space to be able to fund. I don't think that it's just those two states and everyone else is just staying quiet. I think people are joining that side from other states, right, is my thing. And so I like the idea. I totally get what you're saying, but I do think that the movie does try to make it more of, like, I don't see that as the White House anymore, especially with images of, there were multiple people that had clearly committed suicide in the rooms, knowing what was coming. I see that as Hitler's bunker.
Yes. Yes. And Tommy, this is the problem, is that the people who did the January 6th thing felt the same way.
Right.
That's the point. They were saying, hang Mike Pence, because they thought that Mike Pence was ruining democracy.
But is it interesting that he told them to, he was egging them on to do it, our ex-president, versus this president is saying, stay away.
I get what you're saying, but yeah, this movie skirts those politics and says, no matter what, if you believe that the person in Hitler's bunker is Hitler, go kill him.
Yeah. Well,
that's my problem with this movie. That's why, sure, I'm scared. I think it's a great movie. I think it's a very powerful movie, but I'm super terrified about what it means.
I was really distressed by, like, walking the halls and slicing the pie with guns and stuff, walking the halls of the White House. That was really scary.
Well, I'm going to push back a little bit, because I think when we get to that point where they get to the press briefing room and you've got this attempted negotiation, there's those forces that are there, and they basically say, nope, we're getting the president. We're not here to negotiate. The only way he's coming out here is dead. To me, I feel like that, and it may not be as strong enough as you want, I feel like there should have been something inside of you that said, nope, we've stepped over the line. They should be willing to, that is the rules of engagement, right? They are offering surrender. You take them. Something has gone so horrifically bad, their moral compass stuff, like, we're just here to kill this guy. And, like, I felt uncomfortable with that, because I thought, okay, there should be some humanity. There should be some constitutional rights. That is clearly all gone. And I think that was sort of set up, however remotely, in our first sort of scene on the road when they stop for gas. And there's the bodies hanging in the car wash. And the guy escorts Jesse over there because she wants to see it. And he says, you know, yeah, this guy I went to high school with. So it's not the case of Winter Wonderland where it's like, it's some unknown shooting at us. It's, yeah, I know these guys, and they tried to loot from us, and he ends up killing them. And so it's somebody, you know, there's that human connection. Oh yeah, he wasn't that nice to me in high school, but still, he knows this guy. And we get pushed to a point so entrenched in our identity politics, any of those things where it's like, my actions are justified. And I feel like that's where we get to in the White House of, it's no longer about what's just and what's right. It is about quenching that thirst for vengeance above all.
Yeah.
But is that pushing back against what JJ is worried about? So. That seems like you're in line with what JJ is. Not in line, but like you're just.
No, I don't feel it's. I feel like the film's taking a stance. It's not just. I don't feel it's justifying like a January 6th type thing that it's saying, yeah, we can do this. If a group feels that it's right to storm the White House and assassinate Hitler, that's okay. I felt there was a sense of them stepping over the line with that.
I didn't get that at all. And honestly, like, I mean, I'll just concede to you guys, I am a pacifist. Sure. Like, and I don't think it's an easy place in this world to be a pacifist right now. But the press secretary doesn't need to die.
No, absolutely not. That felt very wrong, right?
This is hang Mike Pence. Yeah. Like, this is the, you know, and the thing is that my the thing that scares me about the movie, and I you know, caveated this with, I try to avoid this feeling all the time. I try to consume art in as objective as possible way, but like, without knowing a person's politics, mm-hmm. either side can justify anything.
Oh, sure.
It's like the movie The Hunt.
Yes.
I remember that was a big point that you had of The Hunt when you were like, yeah, because you were saying it doesn't come down against them.
Right.
They think that, and it says, this is what you think, but they don't say, here's exactly why it's wrong. They think that, and then we kill them.
Right.
Yes. The Hunt is a great follow-up to Civil War. Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
And The Hunt came out in March of 2020. Yeah. Like, that's when we did it.
It's the last movie I saw before the shutdown.
Exactly. So, like, you think about, like, the evolution here. This is just what scares me about this movie. This is why I understand that it's powerful. I understand that it's a great, and I use the word great very literally here, a great piece of art. But I am terrified about it. And I don't know that I like it, because I don't think it does anything positive right now. I think it only furthers the divides. It doesn't actually... It purposefully does not prescribe any way to get to a better solution here.
Except it does expose the horrors of war in a locale that looks familiar to us. That's what we don't have a lot of. Seeing all-out war, seeing Vietnam in Missouri, makes you feel maybe differently about, I'd go to war for this, I'd do this. It shows that horror. Some people will absolutely want to. It's the guy that's has the big gun after the three soldiers are already dead. Always going to be those people, and they're gone. When the zombie outbreaks, they won't care if they're zombies or real people. They'll just be like, hooray, we finally get to use this pickup for something. Right. We can't reach them, but it's, I think, everyone in the middle that maybe feels a little bit like a pitchfork every once in a while, or a torch or something like that, that hopefully this will be like, it's not a video game. It's horrific and terrible and sad and lonely and scary and weird.
And that's, I guess, my point.
That's the good side, hopefully, I guess is what I'm
saying. Well, and I love that. And if that is the why, you know, I started off by asking you guys why. If that is the why, then I think that's great. My fear, and the point that I want to say in this show, for any ears that are out there to hear it, is that my fear is that this movie doesn't go there enough because of the fact that it skirts the politics. And instead...
And it could be accidentally inciting,
or polarizing. And that's... Like, by doing exactly what it seems like Alex Garland wanted to do, which is avoid committing to the reasons why this is happening, or the reasons why someone would side with either side, you unfortunately have now made both sides give them reasons to go to war. And that.
But does he give you a reason to side with Nick Offerman's president?
What I'm saying. Hold on a second. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is he gives both sides the ability to say Nick Offerman is their president, or more importantly, their villain.
Yes. So you're basically saying either red or blue could say, oh, that's the bad guy. It reminds me of...
Texas and California. Yes, no, I mean, that's the point. Right. He's doing it on purpose.
Well, I think maybe to answer the question of why was this made, maybe it goes back to... when our group is, you know, they're at the stadium or whatever. There's a scene where the photographer Lee Kirsten Dunst's character,
the world,
she says, you know, when I was out on all these assignments, sending, you know, photos back, she said, I was sending a warning home. Don't let this happen here. Don't do this. Right. And I think that's motivation. Alex Garland with this movie saying, hey, America, don't do this, because this is horrific. So don't go there.
I love that if that's the purpose, but unfortunately, because he doesn't pick a side, he ends up fomenting a civil war. That's my fear. Right?
What if it turns out, because he's British, this is his revenge for the Boston Tea Party? Yes, he throws this movie grenade in here, and we all storm each other, and he's like, and then guess who covers it? The Paps.
Yeah,
right. The Paps. Okay, let's transition here quickly. There's so much to talk about with this movie, and I'm actually glad that we all have these kind of different feelings.
Sure,
because I think this conversation needs to be had out in the world. I don't know if we're gonna get there, because I think people are so entrenched on their sides. But again, like I said, I'm a pacifist. I don't want any of this to happen.
And so, I don't want you to feel
alone or overly sensitive, JJ, when I saw Joker, which is so less provocative than this movie, when I first saw Joker, I was like, this is a dangerous movie right now.
At
the end when it's all, and then I was like, oh, it's probably all in his head. They weren't like all rioting and stuff like that. I don't know. It looks like in the trailer for Folie à Deux, potentially it did all happen. Yeah. But we don't know. But either way, that was the Joker. And I was like, not right now, guys. So I understand your feelings about this movie.
Well, and I still haven't seen Joker for that reason. Because, again, like, knowing the difference between good and evil is kind of important. We need to have agreement on that for us to participate actively in the world.
Yes.
And I understand artists that want to say that there isn't a lot of clarity about that. And I understand, but potentially humanizing people that we have seen as villains historically can have negative consequences. And again, I hate this. I hate this opinion. I try to fight this opinion in myself all the time. And I'm terrified. Let's put it at that. Right.
So we have to honor both sides, JJ.
Right. No. Go back to Charlottesville. It's the front lines of the battle. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, it's so great that they picked Charlottesville for the historic significance there.
Right.
So in terms of the performances, Nick Offerman is listed first. I think it's just because he's first on camera. I don't know that there's anything to say about what he did here. I think he represents
he was a neat pick.
What he's supposed to do. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Are there any other performances that you guys want to talk about here? I thought Kirsten Dunst was wonderful. I was very satisfied with what she did.
Yes, absolutely.
So believable. And I like that that she was game and they were so game to not dress her up at all. She's very utilitarian. Does that mean to like dress just for the job? I don't know.
Sure.
I'm just throwing out words for the first time. Why not do it on a podcast? opaque and utilitarian. Yeah, I mean, I like that. It's very in a movie that is pristinely shot. She is decidedly not made up and not made to look flattering at all, but that makes her so believable because I think she's one of the most beautiful actresses and such a great actress. Yes. I think she's outstanding. I thought her deadness played great. Her anger played great. Her freak out at the end was stunning.
Yeah,
and then her return to form was outstanding. And I really loved everybody in this movie. I thought everybody was pitch perfect. And the young girl I know from Bad Times at the El Royale, which was my favorite movie of that year. She plays a cult survivor of sorts. And I've been following her career because she was really neat in that. And I think she's a star.
She looks far younger than 23.
Yes,
she's going to be able to work young for a long
time. She's one of those Jenna Ortegas. Like
yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was shocked. Steve, who was your favorite performer?
No, I have to agree with Tommy that Kirsten Dunst was just carrying the weight of the world. I was impressed. I do not recall seeing her in this type of a role where it's that world weariness.
Melancholia.
I haven't seen that one yet. And that's on my list.
That's pretty much she's that character is suffering from crippling depression. Yeah. So it's that pretty much the whole movie.
No, it was she carried this movie through and without that performance, I think the film would have lost its center. She grounded that so well. And I think that everybody, it's such a small ensemble cast, but that the dynamic of that, you know, the four of them in the car, that group together worked really well. Right. And then you get, you know, like a Nick Offerman. And at first I thought, oh, is it too distracting? Because everybody else seemed to fade into their characters. But I thought, no, he's going to be a president that's got to be charismatic. So it's got to be somebody that you feel like, oh, it's a familiar face, right? That's what we need. Whereas
that's interesting. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. It needs that familiarity in order to believe that at one point America believed in this person enough to vote him in.
Yeah.
Three terms ago.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then, I think everybody, talks about Jesse Plemons and just that, something of being able to fit into something and just in those few moments, just embody that and do it so well. But there's so many, the opening scene of, I'm just looking at this cast of extras and just how I didn't get a sense of, oh, there's CG generated crowds here in this at all. It just felt really real. They're grabbing people, real people. And the fact that you need
the water rationing station. Is that the scene you're talking about? Or
is that where we start in the very first?
That's the suicide bomb.
Yes.
Ends that scene.
Yeah. So that just felt. Yeah, everything from our leads sort of did not stand out. It didn't feel like, oh, a Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise of like, oh, there's these regular people and then the stars. This group casting seemed to just blend in as typical working people. And I think they all carried it well.
They are dressed perfectly to that regard. Yeah. And I just want to let you know, Steve, we don't say extras anymore. We call them background.
Oh, okay.
Background
artists. Sorry. Get the shot. Get the background in the shot.
Get the shot.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. JJ, will you please take a photo of those extras?
See, right? Exactly. One of the things, is it Wagner Moura or is it Wagner Moura? The guy who played Joel. I had a little bit of difficulty with his accent, but honestly, through the course of the film, it actually played really well to the authenticity of the character. Yes. So any struggle that I had with it early on got sent away after that. One of the things, Tommy, you said that the film was pristinely shot. There was so much great motion control shots here. There were lots of film work that I loved in this movie, but I have to say that the overhead shot of the mass grave after the climax with the Jesse Plemons character was deeply affecting to me because of the way it was shot and because of the slow pull from Jesse. And then to see, I went with her emotionally, the hair's standing up on my, on my arms right now, as I say this, I went with her emotionally and then to cut and to go outside the pit and to see her scrabbling up. And then with a tilt that brings you into the people grabbing her, it doesn't work for real time. It can't, like, it's not possible for that, but it's necessary for the shot of the art of the film. Right. And that was awesome to me. In other words, she would be rescued before that, but we need to see all of that to feel what she's feeling. And
it's a hell, it's a hell vision. Yeah, yes, it's incredible.
It was so good.
To not show the outside of, I mean, it seems like she's in a pit of bodies that could go on forever.
Right.
With that speed of getting out of there is,
and necessary to the film, which that entire set piece is so intense. And it is, I mean, if the things that we've talked about that don't bother you and you want to see the drama of something that could be, seriously, could be possible in this world, this is a strong artistic film to actually take you there.
And it's neat. At first, I was worried about being worried. I was worried that I would be like, oh, I don't want to be mad at the young photographer for being scrappy-doo and getting them all in this horrible mix.
Right.
But we didn't see what happened. Potentially, she kind of saved their lives. In effect, if they were the only car that went through, they all would have been stopped, all would have been brought out, and no saving. If you go through another version of it, you're not like, oh, what a jerk young person making it about herself and getting everyone in trouble. It's really not necessarily. Because why did they stop?
I'm so glad you said that because I had not made that connection and I would not have made that connection because I was so angry. And Tommy knows this about me, but the whole like being ridiculous and like playing around with pranks in the middle of a super intense situation is something that just angers me as a person. And the fact that they did this felt so much like Deus Ex Machina in this situation that you are right, Tom. They all would have been caught and they all would have been dead if they did that. That is the only chance they had for survival. And what a tragedy.
Right. Steve, JJ feels this way because I put a whoopee cushion under him on January 6th.
Oh. So. No, emotionally, it works so well because we get that tension of there's a car following us. Who is it? Who is it? They're coming up on us fast and the tension's ratcheting up. It's like, oh, okay. Then we deflate that. And it's like,
pressure release, pressure release, pressure release.
And then it comes back up.
Where are they?
My personality, I never released through the whole thing. I thought it was terrible. Yeah. Even when they're doing it and everybody's happy and laughing, I'm like, this sucks. Stop doing that.
Right.
Okay. Is there anything that you guys want to say in closing before we move on to our rankings?
I love some of the little touches in the production design. Some things that I just noticed. I can't ascribe any meaning to it, but it's interesting because I just noticed these themes of color. So when we've got the sniper shootout, we see the fingernail polish on the one guy. It's like the pastel colors, but those pastel colors are also on the walls in chalk. When they have their sort of first encounter in that shootout. And I think there's some chalk when they're in the, a couple other places when they're in the stadium, the World Health, there's some spatterings of that. So I don't know what it means, but it was nice to see those consistencies in the world building and how just gritty It felt of the downed copter in the JCPenney parking lot and all that, of just, it really felt. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, I don't even want to, you know, assume how much CG work is going on here to make all of this come together. But it just felt so gritty and real. And they just did such a great job of that destruction and the wear. This has been going on for a while. And I just felt like that carried through so well. That made such a sharp contrast to the, what time portal did we go through that we're in, like, you know, downtown Disneyland or something like that.
Right.
Such a sharp contrast of the well-manicured lawns. And so that production design working through just really, I felt, captured that mood, that tone that carried us through this journey with them.
And you brought up CGI, but you're right. I'm really glad you brought up the pastel, because it was also on the side of his head.
Yes.
Where his head was shaved. That's a very cheap, economical way to talk about, there is a history we are not allowed to have. And it's so normalized that no one brings it up.
Right.
It feels very almost like Star Wars-y or sci-fi of, like, everyone just says the word, you know, don't spill the zilf.
Right.
And no one thinks that's weird because, of course, everyone has zilf in their space fridge. But I like, that's a very economical way to show, like, this is the new world.
Right.
And we're all in it and trying to, we're all playing our part. And sometimes the part is just work in a consignment shop.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Framed by snipers and pretend that the world is fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I think your guys' point is really well taken. The production design of this movie was immaculate and consistent throughout. And that is something that is definitely a strength here for sure.
Yeah. The inclusion. Oh, I'm sorry. Last thing. The inclusion always of whenever there's like fire and stuff or something just sort of like idly burning or having had been destroyed, there's almost always like some weird just sort of side of the road signage there.
Right.
It's always reminding you America. Right. Some horrible thing happened here, but there's a massage parlor right next to it. You know what I mean? That's a smart way to do it without like hitting your head against it. That's why
West Virginia is wild and wonderful.
that's why you don't get the feeling. If you remember way back in the days of like the original Independence Day, when that trailer came out and the aliens shoot the Washington building and it blows up, everyone cheered.
Right.
Because it was like, this is a cartoon.
Yeah.
No big things really get destroyed. Yeah, like Lincoln's memorial's head doesn't fall off. Right. There's one, but that's not like our big thing. It's not used for sport.
Right.
It seems like it's tactical. It's what armies would really do. No one would hide behind Lincoln.
Right.
What a dumb hiding place.
Wait, isn't that the building that they did the
Lincoln Memorial? RPG they did that in the Lincoln Memorial. But I mean
sitting
using the statue.
Right. I'm saying there's a sniper on his chair.
Right. Right.
Would be older movies would do that because it'd be like a video game. Right. Yeah.
That makes sense.
I do want to ask you guys about the music. The song choices, if it either pulled you out, because it wasn't songs that were familiar to me. Looking at them, one of them's from like the late 60s, we're in the 70s, but it felt sort of a different time period. And it's because it's not contemporary songs. It's not songs that are familiar.
It's Americana.
It is an era of Americana. I really enjoyed it. And I've got the playlist sort of on repeat of several of these songs because it just for me captured a certain mood to it, but I just didn't know if that's unique to me or how you felt about songs and any of that in this film.
The bravest one that could have been like that terrible sound cue in It that brought everyone out of Just Call Me Angel in the morning when he's getting puked on and everyone was like, well, that was a big swing and didn't work.
Right.
I thought the inclusion of that De La Soul song after that horrible lead up to hearing someone crying, hearing someone crying, then just shooting him and then go right to a De La Soul song, which is a very hip hop fun song about drugs. Mm-hmm. It's about crack. So it's like dealing with horribleness with this kind of way. I thought it was really cool. And it evoked also thoughts of certain members of American culture have been going through, in effect, wars like this. Mm-hmm. For a very long time.
Yeah.
Their civil war has never ended. But that was a gross probably thing to say out loud.
Well, I love De La Soul, a massive fan. And their music has only recently, I think, in the last 2 years, been available for licensing. So I'm super happy to see them whenever they show up. They were also in the end credits for No Way Home, the Spider-Man movie. And so I'm a massive fan of them putting that in the movie. I think The
three is the magic number, right?
Yep, that's the one for No Way Home. And then the particular song that they talked about when Sammy died, when they rolled into the war camp, about this all being a dream and all this stuff. That was very intensely emotional for me as well.
Thank you for bringing up the music, Steve. I forgot that was, and the sound design is incredible and deafening. Like, I also can't hear anything you guys are saying. I'm just trying to read your lips and trying to interject when I can.
Those helicopters are constant. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let's rate it now. We are on Letterboxd, True Story FM's family of film podcasts. They're all part of the Next Reel's headquarters page. Letterboxd is a great way to track movies you see, write your own reviews, and be a part of a larger community of film lovers like yourself. Sign up for your own account today, and if you upgrade to a pro or patron account, use the discount code NEXTREEL at checkout to save 20%.
Do you have to type it like that?
NEXTREEL! I don't know. Maybe that sounds like all caps, but don't do it all caps.
Okay.
This works for renewals as well. So out of 5 stars and 0.5s count, Tommy, how do you feel about Civil War?
Yes, I really loved this movie. I'm grading it weirdly, and maybe this isn't the way to do it, but against other Alex Garland movies in order to inform my score. Both Annihilation and Ex Machina for me are 5-star movies. And so I have to give this one a 4 because it does not reach the heights and perfection that those do. But this is also a much more ambitious story and structure. I mean, Annihilation is crazy, but it's also like, and also that's interesting. It's also kind of a road movie. Anyways, so I'm going to give this 4 stars but I'm sure there's a very good chance that'll go up to 4.5 the next time I watch it.
Nice. And I assume that's a heart then.
No. Yes, absolutely a heart. That'd be dumb. Okay. That'd be weird. Well, I shouldn't have said it. I didn't mean to say dumb. I would say that would be weird of me.
Yeah. I will say that you mentioned about this being an ambitious project. This, from what I understand, is the largest budget that A24 has ever spent on a film, coming in at like $50 million, I think, is somewhere where it is.
My guess is Annihilation would be next in line.
Well, was Annihilation A24 as well?
I'm not sure. That's what I mean. Of like, if this is number one, Annihilation was also like, he's really pushing A24's budget. That's why all the rest of their movies look like, I see the TV glow, which looks amazing, but it also looks like maybe I shot it.
I thought Annihilation was Netflix because that was.
Steven, I'm horribly embarrassed. My pants fell off and my.
Oh, no.
I know.
4 stars and a heart for Tommy. Steve, what was your thoughts?
So this is one that maybe because I saw it Thursday evening and it's had time to simmer and percolate. So it's not an initial gut reaction. And so I've got time to think, how'd this film sit with me? And the fact that I can't get it out of my head. I'm eager to go see it again. We didn't talk much about the photography of just those moments of, you know, integrating those snapshots that, you know, are taken and how powerful those moments are. And the fact that, as I said, this, you know, I hate to, it's not a comparison, but I put it in the same category as Apocalypse Now. I love that type of storytelling. It just was a really emotional and powerful story and film for me. I'm going to give it 4.5 and a big old heart.
All right.
That's awesome. Another movie that I was reminded of when I was watching it was Zombieland 2, Double Tap. You know, they are kind of going through a war-torn world, and they are on the road. Strangely enough, that's how it feels. But, you know,
the whole time I was like, what movie is this like? Zombie something? Now you finally helped me. Thank you.
Thank you. No, I will say that I'm really glad we had this conversation because you guys helped me sort of realize sort of the greatness of the film too. So I actually moved it up. When I first came to the conversation, I was going to be a 3-star, but I'm giving it 4 stars because it is that strong of a film.
But
for
no
all
heart.
The reasons I mentioned, right? I have to say no heart because I am super concerned by this movie. I have also additional quibbles that we talked about as well. So those things don't take away from the execution of the film. Those things don't take away from the greatness of the piece of art, but I'm terrified, and I want anyone to talk to us and anyone who else has seen this movie to talk more about the ways for us to find ways so that the people are not bubbling up to this kind of stuff.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
It's terrifying right now. So anyway, thank you guys so much. I'm really happy we had the conversation, and I'm happy about the ratings too. talking about Civil War. Next month, we are planning to go see Furiosa. Am I right?
Is that a Mad Max saga?
It's in the Mad Max saga. I don't know. Is it a Mad Max saga?
That's what I think. I think that's the full title. Yes. Is Furiosa right. A Mad Max saga?
That makes sense. Young Furiosa is Anya Taylor-Joy. Is that right?
Yes. Yep. And it's from the twisted mind of George Miller. We're back to calling visions twisted in trailers, and I'm not here for it. The first person I ever remembered being called the twisted mind of Danny DeVito for Ruthless People. Oh, and I was like, can you say that? Does he know you're saying that? Because I was very young. And now I realize it's a marketing tool.
I love it. Well, so see you again in May, and that is coming out Memorial Day weekend. If things change, we'll definitely let everyone know. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. Tommy Handsome.
Oh, my God. JJ, thank you so much for jumping in and hosting. You did a great job, as always. This was a pleasure.
Always. Thank you. Steve D'Armento, see you next time.
Hey, thank you for this trip down memory lane with you two guys, spending some time discussing some great movies.
Oh, that's right. We stormed the Capitol.
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely not. I'm not going to go there because people believe stuff, you guys.
I know. I'm sorry.
Don't forget to join our online community with fellow movie lovers. You can learn more at thenextreel.com/Discord. And again, if you're not already a member, please consider supporting this show. To learn more, visit thenextreel.com/membership. Oh, also, please do the things you're supposed to do with your podcasts. Rate, review, subscribe, and of course, listen. Or perhaps most importantly, share. Please let any of those movie lovers in your life know about this show.
Yeah.
Best way we have to get more people listening is you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Here on the Film Board, we have covered quite a variety of great page-to-screen adaptations over the years, from superheroes like Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight Rises, based on stories like Nightfall and The Dark Knight Returns,
to horror and sci-fi like Max Brooks's World War Z and Hiroshi Sakuraba's All You Need Is Kill, which became one of our favorites, Edge of Tomorrow, with Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt.
And who could forget Andy Weir's stranded astronaut adventure, The Martian, or Dave Eggers' tech thriller, The Circle?
Supposedly so much better than the movie.
We've also explored Stephen King epics like The Dark Tower and It, biopics like Damien Chazelle's First Man,
and sweeping sagas like Denis Villeneuve's take on Frank Herbert's Dune.
And don't forget Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon, based on David Grand's nonfiction book about the 1920s murders of the Osage Nation. I just finished the book, and it's fantastic.
It's always fascinating to look at the source material, and we often do as the book lovers we are. For those of you out there who love to do the same, head to thenextreel.com/originals to find all of our past episodes and dive deeper into these adapted stories.
And it's not just stories. We've included things like the video games Uncharted and Detective Pikachu.
That's right. Thenextreel.com/originals is your one-stop shop for in-depth looks at the sources for cinematic adaptations that we have discussed. Every purchase you make supports the Film Board and The Next Reel's family of shows.
So what are you waiting for? Head to thenextreel.com/originals and get your next read today.